Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Hello, I hope you're having a wonderful day, week. Thanks for choosing this podcast to listen to. We usually dive deep. Today we dive a little deep. And I appreciate everybody tuning in. Thank you, Patreon. Patreon.com/Inside of You if you want to support the podcast in awesome other ways. Patreon is a cool thing where some people get boxes from me every couple months. And there's tons of perks. So check it out. You get to get your name shouted out on the podcast, et cetera, et cetera. The handles are Ryan Taez.
No, they're not. But if you're asking me to say them, I will tell you those. Inside of You Pod on Twitter, at Inside of You Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
That is true.
I'm not calling it X, just by the way.
Yeah, I'm not either. It's Twitter.
It's Twitter. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't either.
Look at us standing up to billionaires.
Yeah, we're standing up. Fuck them. Yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy week, crazy weekend. I've been traveling a lot, and I hope you guys are being good to yourself and, you know, trying to do some healthy things and all that stuff, therapy and whatever you do to make yourself feel better about yourself. That's what counts. What else? Inside of You online store, lots of cool stuff, small little stuff, tons of merch, tumblers, whatnot, ship keys, scripts. And then the TalkvillePodcast.com, there's new pieces of art of me and Tom signed. I'm on the Cameo. You can see where I'm going, the cons and all that. Instagram, at the Michael Rosenbaum. And you just go to Linktree, and there I am. And last but not least, the band, Sunspin. Wearing the Sunspin hat today. You like the new Sunspin hat?
I like the color.
Thanks. I worked on it. They're not even for sale, but I might put them on the Inside of You. I like it.
It's like an electric blue.
Electric blue, electric blue on mine. That was a cool song. Sunspin is the band, sunspin.com. If you want to book us or you want to see when our concerts are or you want merch or you want to book us on a Zoom, it's there. And been seeing a lot of patrons and a lot of people come to these cons. And it's so cool to put faces and names together. And you know what? I have actually gifts for you. Somebody made another bracelet of Ryan.
Oh, neat.
And one of Bryce. Yeah, folks love you.
I don't know why.
They're like, when are you going to get inside of Ryan?
Maybe for a Patreon episode.
I think we should do that. Why don't we get inside of Ryan for their next Patreon?
Yeah. All right.
I'll just ask you questions.
Okay. And then we can hear your Denny's steak story again.
Oh, God. I told it again to Joel McHale that's coming out, but maybe we'll cut it. I don't know. I think Bryce gets a kick out of it. But anyway, today's guest is someone I've always loved as an actor, Peter Facinelli. You know him from that vampire series of movies. And he's been in a lot of stuff. And he's got this new movie coming out, which I'm stoked about, which we'll talk about. He's a really good dude. Just a solid dude. I had no idea. But I think you're going to really enjoy this one. I hope you do. And you'll let me know what you think after. So why don't we just do it, Ryan? Why don't we get inside of Peter Facinelli?
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah, actors are really funny because they're like, I just want to get on a show. If I could just get on a show, it lasts like 10 years. And then when they get on the show, they're like, it's like prison. It is a little like going to jail because you're working 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
And you don't get much of a life. So like people don't realize like you be careful what you wish for. Cause when you get on a show, like, and you're, you know, one of the top one, two or three on the call sheet.
Oh, your life's done. That's your life.
That becomes your life. Like you get in and on the weekends, you're so tired, but you're learning lines for the next week. So like you never really have
it's
a day off.
It's perpetual stress, isn't it? Yeah. You're not.
Well, I don't know. Stress is just like you don't get to live life because your life becomes that character in that show, and you have very few moments for yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but don't you think that if you're constantly learning lines, if you have this responsibility, if there's always a pressure on you to look good, to be rested, to perform, to do, you know, it's like, imagine it, to me, it's like sex. It's like we have to perform, you know, have to, and if it doesn't work, then everybody's disappointed. And so there is a stress that I feel like if you're on a show for 7-10 years, that at least I did. I always carry that. I have to be good. I have to know my lines. I have to. There's always, I'm hanging out with my friends. No, and I'm like, pressure. Oh, 2 days I film. There's pressure.
There's pressure.
You know?
Like you're always thinking like, I got to know my lines for Monday. So if you're doing something on Saturday, like.
You're never relaxing.
You're never really.
You don't relax till that series over.
Yeah.
Maybe you're different. You seem more laid back than I am. Like you could deal with pressure.
I haven't done the show. I mean, I did a show for 7 years, but I wasn't like.
Was it about the opposite of a doctor?
There was some doctors and stuff and hospital stuff, but I wasn't number one on the call sheet. So like, and it was more of an ensemble, and it was a half hour. So we only filmed 5 day episodes. It was really lovely, actually. It was perfect because like I went in and I had wonderful actors to work with. I really enjoyed working with them, and it was just enough where I had some days off and like I could fly. It shot in New York, so I could fly home on the weekends.
The life.
And see my kids. So it was a good balance. So I could see, you know, but
if you were number one or two,
I did do a series. I was number one on, and it only went a year, but we did like 22 episodes and that's a lot. 'Cause 10 months out of the year, you're on set like 12 hours a day. It sounds like, oh, boo hoo us, but like it's
not glamorous.
It's not, it's not red carpet. It's definitely like, I mean, there are people taking care of you, you know, you're hungry, you need a Coke, I can get you a Coke. And you know, so it's not like,
that's because you don't have time to do it.
You don't have time to do it. Yeah. it's basically that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, no, I'll get my own Coke. No, I'll get it.
No. Oh, go on set. We need you on set.
Yeah, but I didn't have to do that. I didn't do that series in particular for 7. And even though it would have been nice to get like one more year out of that, like I was careful after that to like choose. Like I remember getting an offer for a series and it was 22 episodes and like, and it was a straight offer. And it was wonderful when you get a straight offer, right?
Yeah.
But it shot in Chicago. And I thought, okay.
I had the same thing.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, so I have kids. And if I take this series in Chicago, I'm not going to see them for 10 months out of the year because it's like I'm number one on the call sheet. Yeah. I won't be able to fly home on the weekends, right? And they're not going to come to Chicago because my kids were all in school in LA. So then like 10 months out of the year, I'm just like, I'm not going to see them. And then as an actor, you're like, best case scenario, this goes 7 years. So I won't see my family for what, 7 years? Oof. Like, and then they're going to be grown up and I'll have a ton of money, but I won't have had the time with them. So then it became like, I said no. And then they came back with more money. And then I said no again. And then my agent was like, no, take the money. And I was like, I can't. Because like, they were like, they were throwing ridiculous. The more you say no, that's like an aphrodisiac.
I know. Only if you mean it.
Yeah.
Never
yeah.
say no if you're trying to get something.
If you're trying to get something, it doesn't work.
It doesn't
work. You have to really like, they smell it out. You know?
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Well, what's it going to cost us?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. And then it came back with more and more. And then I was just like, I can't. And I didn't do it. And it lasted maybe that series only lasted like 5 or 6 episodes. Got canceled. So honestly, like, I'm glad I didn't do it because it would have been a canceled series under your belt. You don't want to have too many canceled series under your belt. Yeah. So like, you know, so it was good that I didn't do it. But I also was like, best case scenario, go 7 years, but I'm not going to be happy. I have a lot, ton of money, but then I won't.
There's no way anybody could be happy doing 10 months a year for 7 years. It's unless, here's the thing. When you're younger, you can do this.
Yeah.
You have the ability because your body, it's more, you just last longer.
You have more time too, because if you're 22, and you get out of the series at 28, 29.
You're still young.
You still got a career.
You get in a series when you're 50.
Yeah, and that's it.
And you're 58. AARP is calling you.
Yeah, then you just got to like go retire. That's pretty much maybe.
That's it. I'm getting those letters now from the AARP.
AARP.
Do you get those yet?
Not yet, but I'm close.
Should
I'm close.
I write back?
if we can get on the cover together, let's
Could
do it.
Could you imagine? That would be great. Let's do a commercial. That would be good. Hey.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool. Do you Have you always been one to learn your lines quickly? Do you, can you shut it off? Can you just fall asleep? Did you ever feel anxiety? Did you ever get that kind of stuff when you were working?
It's painful all the time. Like I wish I had a photographic memory.
Me too.
I do not. No. It takes me like 3 days at least to memorize stuff. I mean, when you're doing a series, your brain starts to pick it up quicker. For
it helps,
sure. It definitely helps. But if you're like, it's like, it's a muscle. So like between jobs, if you have 2 months off, 3 months off, and then you have like a chunk of dialogue, like it's stressful to, because it's pressure-y and you want to know and you want to learn. Now, the more you get comfortable with my character, the more I feel more comfortable with my character, the more I'm like, okay, I can make them say anything. And like, it's easier to learn the dialogue when you first get that, you know, first day on set and you're always like, I hope I don't have like 5 pages of dialogue. It's just so nerve wracking. Cause you don't want to be the one that's like, can I say shitting the bed?
Have you ever shit the bed?
You know, early on in my career, I had a movie that I did and it was a big movie. It was like $60 million. I was like the main antagonist, working with like name actors.
You could say their names, right?
Yeah, I could say their names. I was working with Angela Bassett.
Wow.
I was working with Lou Diamond Phillips. I was working with James Spader.
Oh, yeah.
And so like, I was like the main bad guy in this movie. And it was a big director. Walter Hill was directing it. And so,
Warriors.
Yeah, Warriors. So I had like the first week off because my character comes in on page like 10 or whatever. So they were shooting like the first week without me. And so I was like, you know what? I've got this huge monologue coming up and I'm going to crush it. So I'm memorizing this monologue for this, you know, the whole time I'm like cramming it. It's like 5 pages of backstory where they're like interrogating me and it's just me talking. Like, it's like, and then what happened? And then chunk, 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 chunk. And then, and so this, and then chunk, chunk. So I knew it backwards and forwards like that. And I was so like, going to crush. The night before we shoot.
No, don't say they changed lines on you.
My machine starts to go off and I get a note saying, hey, we rewrote the scene and it's completely different. And now it's like 7 pages of like
the night before. Oh gosh.
Literally the night. And it was like 11 o'clock and I had like a 5 o'clock.
I would have said, honestly, I'm not doing it. I honestly just can't do that. If you give me an earwig and feed me the fucking lines, I'll do it. Yeah.
It was terrifying. Cause now I'm like, oh God. Like so I'm up like, you know, I'm looking at it and it's like, not similar. It's different, you know? So I get to set and it was a train wreck. It was like every actor's worst nightmare. Like I still get anxiety when I think about it because I was like half in the old monologue and half in the new one. So I would start the new one and then go into the old one and then go, and it was so bad that I was like, I'm going to get fired. There's no way that I'm not going to get fired. So Walter was really cool. He was like, look, he knew I was struggling, so he did all the other actors' coverage first, right? And I was still struggling by the end of the day. And
because you're tired now, you really
now are struggling. I'm exhausted, and like I've got again like half of one model, and so at the end of the day, he was like, "Look, I'm not going to shoot your stuff today. Just learn it." So I know I threw it at you last minute. Just learn. So I went home that night and I crammed it.
They shot it the next day.
He shot it the next day.
And you nailed it.
I nailed it the next day. But the day of, I was like, oh, I'm getting fired. It's my first day.
Oh, gosh. With like
huge actors that have been shooting already for a week.
And
so
then,
like,
you feel like they're looking
train.
At you like, oh.
And they're looking at me like, you're shitting the bed. And like.
And you're like, guys, I just got this.
Yeah.
I just got it. No one cares.
Nobody cares.
That happened to me once it's where so they threw coming. Out a scene. They go, hey, we wrote this scene. We added it to another episode the day of. And we're going to shoot it today after lunch. And just my nerves wouldn't let me memorize the lines.
Yeah.
I was just already freaking out.
Yeah.
And so when I got there, it was just like, I remember just doing like maybe 2 lines and then going, line. And then they feed it to me. And then I'd just do it.
But at least you were on a show. So like people knew like, hey, he could act. Like, you know. Imagine being first day on a huge studio movie with like big name actors. And I wasn't a name yet. I think it was like my second movie. And
that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
And I'm like, oh God, this is like, you know, all of a sudden you're playing like high school baseball. Now you're in the major leagues and you're tanking. You know what I mean? So I was definitely thought I'm getting fired. There's no way I'm not getting fired.
I would have rather shit my pants in front of those actors. I would have rather shit my pants in front of Angela Bassett.
It's pretty much the same feeling of like, because they didn't look at me like, oh God, I feel sorry for you. They looked at me like, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. Like, yeah. And I felt bad. It wasn't, and maybe that was me perceiving it. Like, obviously they're not looking at me like that, but I'm looking at it like, they're looking at me like, you don't belong here, kid. Like, you're not cutting the mustard. And like, we're crushing it. What are you doing? You know, cause I just couldn't finish sentences cause I was starting one sentence going, no, I starting the next sentence with the old monologue. It was so confusing to me. And it was because I over prepped. And so now like, I don't really memorize too early because I know that like what I don't want that to ever happen again where it gets cemented. So I'll try not to memorize until like a couple of days out.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
But do you still think every time you're about to, like it's the day or 2 days before the shoot, you're shooting something, do you think, oh my God, they're going to change the lines on me? Do you still get those haunting feelings?
Knowing your lines has always been nerve wracking to me because it's like taking a test.
You know what I mean? And I don't do good with tests.
Yeah, I don't do well under pressure.
When I know it and I'm confident, I'm awesome. I love
it. By day three of filming, like, and you know, you've already established that, okay, I feel like the character, you're getting into a rhythm. You know, then you don't, there's less pressure on you. You know?
Yeah.
And so like, but when you're first couple of days and you're working with new people, it's a new day at school and everyone's looking at you, it's tough. Like, and I think everyone's trying to find their feet on the first few days too.
Yeah.
So it's just tough for everybody. I mean, it's a weird job because we're always, you know, it's always changing. And I love that about it, but I also like, you know, there must be some... Yeah, having the familiarity of being on a series for a while also is comforting in some ways too. I would think. I don't know.
Yeah.
I, like I said, the one that I did do, it was more an ensemble. So I was less, but even then, like when there was big chunks of dialogue, it's a little pressure-y because you don't have time. They don't have time. You know?
They don't have time.
They're always racing a clock. You know, I'll tell you what, it was an interesting experience. I just shot a movie. I'm allowed to talk about it. On Fire,
right? Which I just saw.
Yeah,
and I promise you, I watched it.
Yeah,
I liked it. A lot.
I was telling you, you know, on the way over here, I thought, I wonder if he watched it because I was like, you know, you talk to people all the time.
I wasn't gonna watch it.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't have time for this shit.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like honestly, like if I was meeting people, you're doing three or four of these a day. You're like, I gotta watch. It's almost like homework. Movies should be like, oh, I want to sit back and watch a movie.
Have some corn.
It's harder to watch movies, I find, nowadays. Like even my own movie, like I think it's because
there's so much.
Also it's a time commitment, right? Like there's so much content out there, but like we're so used to getting things in short spurts that like, you know, to sit down and go, okay, I'm going to commit to an hour and a half or 2 hours. It's harder because when you have content on your phone that's giving you two minutes here, and then you can do something, and then 2 minutes there, 2 minutes. And so now, like, I like going to the theater because, like, everything's shut off.
Yeah.
But if I'm at home,
you're distracted.
I'll say, you know what? I'm going to start this movie. And then I'll go, oh, but then I have to, like, really commit to this for two. I don't have two.
I know you got kids. You got kids. You got to go back.
I want to start this now? And, like,
I know.
It's
man.
Harder.
It is. That's why I have movie nights on Tuesday night where you're forced to watch a movie.
Yeah.
It's me and my horror movie buddies.
Well, I was impressed that you actually watched it. So when I was doing On Fire,
quiz me.
The director ended up getting COVID and I ended up having to take over directing it.
Unbelievable.
And
so you produced it, you co-directed it.
Yeah, and started it.
And starring in it.
Well, I originally was just going to star in it.
Right.
You know, they were like, hey, this movie, do you want to come out? And I thought, well, this is a good premise. And you know, there's a lot of fires in the world right now. And this movie kind of shows you what people go through, you know? And so I liked that aspect of it. And I wasn't a producer on it either. Like
until
I came on, and then there were things that they were like, hey, would you produce it? Because there's things that we could use your help on. And I was like, okay. And then the director got sick. And then they were like, hey, would you just take over for tonight? And then they were like, we can't shut down. Will you just finish? I was like, yeah. And then then it was good because when I was in post, then I was able to like have more say, which is always great because as an actor.
It's more fun, creative.
Yeah, it's more creative, and so many times as an actor, I'm sure you know too, like we give over our work and we think, oh, I feel like this is going to be a good one, and then you get disappointed because you don't have any say in like the rhythm of the movie or how they put it together or your performance, and you're like, I know I gave them better stuff than that. You know what I mean? So like when I saw the cut, you know, I was able to say, well, let's try this, or these performances can be better, and you know, get jumped into the editing room and shaped it. And, you know, the whole ending we reshot because the original ending just didn't feel, it felt like it fell flat, you know? So this ending that you saw was completely.
Don't give it away.
Yeah, completely reshot. And then became more a tribute to firefighters and first responders. Right. That whole sequence wasn't in there, you know?
Through the woods thing?
Yeah, the kid running. Yeah. And that kid had no, you know, who played my son, he didn't have any arc. So I was like, we need an arc. So I was able to get way more input into that because I was directing and producing. It's
called On Fire.
Yeah.
It's available on video on demand. Digital release of the film November 14th.
November 14th.
So it's going to be right around here, guys. So you got to check this out because what I, and continue, but I just wanted to say that what I liked about it is that the characters were all really well thought out. It wasn't like, I mean, you immediately care about them. You got this old man, your father played by Lance Henriksen, who I love.
Legend,
I
met
a few, just a legend. And like, it's not just this, you know, angry old guy. It's like this emotional guy who just wants to be with his wife who passed away. And like, some of those scenes are so emotional. He just wants to smoke and says, screw it. This is my life. Let me just, you know, let me go.
Yeah.
And this whole time you're trying to hang on to him. You're trying to. And you know, and your wife is in the movie is so solid.
Fiona Dourif. She's great.
She's great, and she's great. So strong. She's pregnant, and she's the strong character. So all the characters are really strong or develop. And I saw that, and I liked even the CGI with the fires. I was like, I was looking, and it looked really good.
Yeah, because so, when I started that, when I came on, when I got to set, Nick Lyon, who directed it alongside with me, he started out as the main director, and. He when I came on, they were like, oh, we're not using any fire, you know, at all. Like, we're going to do all CGI. And I thought, oh, this better be good or it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
So then when we got into the editing room, you know, we had this great CGI artist, Joe Lawson, and we just kept pushing him. You know, he'd come back with stuff. He's like, it's still a little. Keep going back. Had shapes and chains of light. And he did such a great job. Like, now we have, like, stock footage stuff and we have CGI stuff. I can't tell the difference sometimes which one is real and which one's
not. Like the smoke going when you're driving, the smoke go in and out of stuff.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Thank you. So when I took over as director for that, it was interesting because, you know, when I'm an actor, there's a part of me that really wants to please the director all the time.
Of course.
Because you're there to service their stories. So like, you know, you finish a take and you're always immediately like, look to them, like, you know, nod of approval. Do they like it? Am I way off? Like, you know, is it too big, too small? And you know, you and I have been doing this for a long time. So there's part of us that knows like what feels right, what doesn't. But you always are looking straight to that director and catching their eye. And they're like, thumbs up. And, you know, can I try it different? Like, what else could I do? What else do you think? And so what was interesting is I've directed before. Other actors. I love actors. I love like working with them and I love collaborating with them. And I love because it's such a vulnerable place. Like you just mentioned, like when knowing your lines and the pressure. So getting actors to go, look, you know, let's just play, you know, and find stuff together. And like, I think that's appreciated. And when I work with directors that are actors, like they understand it, that lingo, because sometimes you get directors that are just like, why are you making that face? Or you're like, what face?
Don't do that.
Don't
slow
do that.
Down. Faster.
Yeah, faster.
You're moving, like, on.
Yeah, moving on. Yeah. And you're just like, and it's like cold bedside manner, you know? So I think that actors appreciate when I work with them, because I see everything, you know, every little thing, an eye movement. I'm like, I saw what you
and
were doing.
And actors need to be
acknowledged for what they're doing. Like
sometimes coddled.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Sometimes different actors need different things, but sometimes you have to be that director comes and goes, hey, that was really good.
Yeah.
I really liked what you did. Let's do something else now, because we got that.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Even if it was terrible, it's good to tell them it was great. Because then they're like, okay, good. I got one on tape. And then they loosen up. Like a loose actor is a good actor.
I've had directors that just had gone, but they know me, but they'll be like, Rosenbaum, let's do a better take than that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, what do you, all right, gosh.
But it shuts you down. Like if someone's like making you feel insecure. So you want to make people feel secure, because as they're secure and comfortable, they're giving you more. They're always going to give you more. So when I work with actors, like I love being able to make them feel comfortable, because I want to feel comfortable when I'm acting, you know? But what was interesting about directing this one, when Nick was sick and I took over, I didn't have that person to look to go, hey, that was good or bad. Like it was me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and it was so much more freeing in that sense, because I was like, okay, I know what I need to get. I know what the scene's about.
You don't worry about you as much.
And I'm not worried about me.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
And then it became more about like, I need to give to the other actors because I need them to be good for this. So I became such, like so much more of a giving actor, because it wasn't about like service. How was I doing? It was about like, I have to give as much as I can to get that other actor to give me more. And so it became about giving all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to take that into my next stuff. Like,
yeah. But I'll say that I remember when I was directing this film and I was the lead in it, and the editor called me up after and he goes, hey bud. I go, hey, how's it going? He's like, there was something wrong. Did you see the dailies?
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, nothing's wrong, but you're the lead role. You need to give yourself more takes.
Okay.
And I'm like, why am I not good? He's like, no, it's not that. It's just like, I know how you are. You want to give to everybody else. But remember,
you
need to give yourself the options and things in the editing room. And I go, all right. And so did you think about that at all? Did someone say that to you? Like,
no,
hey.
but I had directed a movie before this one that I wrote and directed. And I did that on that one, cause I played a smaller role in that one. And because when you're, I mean,
exhausted, I almost died. Well, no one knows that, but I felt like it.
I played a smaller role in that one, cause I wanted to be able to get, you know, focus on directing.
Sure.
But when I did have to come in to work, cause I was like, oh, I'll play this smaller role. So it's fun. You know, everyone else is going to be having fun. I'll have the smaller role, but it was like a pain in the ass. Cause it was like, I got to put my costume on. I got to put hair and makeup. I want to be by the crew in the set setting up the camera. And now I'm sitting hair and makeup, like dying. Cause I want to be on set.
Yeah.
And then I get there and became like that, like, okay, let me just race through my stuff. Cause I got to get to their coverage. Yeah. And I got to get to the, and so I learned on that one, not that I was bad in that. I don't think I was bad, but it was like I learned in that one, like, okay, I have to also
give myself options.
But I had a good producer friend of mine on Fire too, and he also directs. So I would look to him.
He had your back.
He had my back, and I would look to him and go, "Hey, that cool? Yeah." And it wasn't in the way of like, "Was that good? Do you want something else?"
It was just like, "Hey,
it was just a confirmation. Like that felt good to me."
Yeah,
you know.
And my best friend Tom, who's not an actor, not in the business, he would be off camera and he'd go,
"Yeah,
do one more."
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I needed.
You kind of need that. Otherwise, you're running to the monitors watching.
I'm not watching. I never watched a scene with me in it.
Yeah.
I never let them go back, roll back.
Yeah, because you just don't have the time to sit there.
I didn't have the time.
I mean, you're literally racing a clock. It's literally a race every day. But I love the adrenaline rush.
You love the race.
I actually really enjoy directing. I think I've always been. I think I've always been a frustrated director who acted, because like I mean even when I was acting, it was always like, I feel like that this should be shaped differently, or like I wish you would put the camera over there, like, and I'd have all these ideas, and I was like, you have to be careful because you never want to, like, you know, step on director's toes. But I'd always be like, what would happen if you did that thing? And then sometimes they'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm going
to
steal that.
Yeah, there's a way to do
it.
He goes like, you know, because Chaz Palminteri, I did this movie with him. He was a first-time director. Yeah. And he goes, what are we doing? And the director would say, I'm going to move the camera over here and I'm going to get this cool shot. It's going to go like, it's going to move through here and go through here. He goes, all right, you'll never use it, but do what you want. That's what he would say to him. And it is
fun. A delicate balance. You have to really be respectful because, and I'm overly respectful with directors because it's like, I never would want somebody telling me, but I'm the type of guy that's like, look, I'll take a good idea from anyone. Craft service guy's like, hey, would you try this? And it works. I'd be like,
I always say that too. If you have a good idea, I'll
do it. Doesn't matter.
Just don't bombard me with those things. So don't feel like now it's this open door policy.
Yeah.
But by the way, I will say one more thing about On Fire, which you guys got to see November 14th on video demand and digital release. Can we just talk about Jacob for a second?
Yeah.
The character Jacob,
small
character that you meet with, like when you're on your way to save, I'm not going to give anything away, but save someone. And this random guy who's so emotional and in the midst of this fire and his performance and just like both of you guys together. Yeah. I thought that was one of the best scenes in the movie.
Oh, thank you, man. Because I really directed that night, and I was really excited to work with that actor because he brought a lot of stuff, and I was like,
oh my god, he's so emotional.
Yeah. And at first, it wasn't like it was kind of like safe, and I was like, try this, and then it got to that, and it was one of those nights that you felt like, okay, I really helped shape that and make him comfortable enough.
Yeah.
So because a lot of times, you know, if he came with that, he might have thought, oh, well, is this too big? But giving him the space to actually work in that and then get him there. And I really like that scene too. In the original cut, it wasn't in it. And I was like, no, we need to put that back in because it's a scene where I meet this guy on the road. And I'm not giving too much away, but he ends up coming out of the woods and I'm driving to find my family and he needs a ride back, you know, home because his, you know, house just burned down. He's very emotional, and I'm like, okay, I just have to go and get my family, and then we'll go back to town. And he turns from like help me to helping me instead of asking for help. He's actually giving me help, and he's going, no, you can't go that way because you're gonna die. And I'm like, I have to go that way. And it becomes almost like an argument. He's like, you're not listening to me. You can't go that way because he's seen what's in the abyss, right?
Yeah, he's like, You can't go there.
Yeah.
Because it's so traumatic.
And then it makes my character like you root for him because now he's doing something heroic where he knows, oh my God, wherever I'm going, it's going to be bad, but I'm going anyway.
And he sees it in your eyes.
Yeah.
You didn't have to even say much. You just like said, I have to do this.
Yeah.
And he looks at you go,
and he says, What's your name? Yeah. He says, I'll pray for you. And it's like, all of a sudden it comes from a place of like, please help me out. My house burned down to, oh my God, you're screwed.
You're going
to
die.
I'm going to pray for you. And then the tables get turned and it wasn't really written that way. Like we got it there.
You know what that was? That was humanity.
Yeah,
it was like how humanity should be.
Yeah.
That's what it should be like.
Yeah.
You know, people helping each other.
Yeah.
And it was just,
and you could see the trauma that he went through, you know what I mean? Just by the way he was playing that scene. It was like such a traumatic event he was just coming from. And knowing that I was gonna go into that traumatic event, he was trying to like stop me, but my family was in there, so I have to keep going, you know.
Yeah.
And then it's like we're only like 10, 15 minutes in, and you're already as an audience member going, okay, this guy's, you know, doing something heroic. I'm going to follow him, my character, because he's like putting his life on the line to anyways. You know what I mean?
Hey, when was the first time like your parents said, our son's made it? Now I feel comfortable in saying our son's doing it. He's made it. Like when was this? You know, because your parents were probably, you know, your dad was a waiter.
Yeah, he was a waiter.
And your mom was just a homemaker?
Housewife, yeah.
Like he was, and so when you wanted to be an actor, was it something so foreign to them? They're like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of had to trick them into it. Cause like when I was really shy, like super shy, like so shy that in high school I was too shy to get in on the lunch line. Cause I was like, well, what if like I drop my tray, or what if like something happens, the whole cafeteria, you know, in those movies where something happens, you got a rip in your pants and the whole cafeteria is looking at you. I would die. Right. And I went to a school like 3,500 kids. Like there was a lot. So it was intimidating to like grab your tray, get on a lunch line, giant jocks next to you. And like, and so for the first 3 years, I like ate a pretzel in the back of the room and grabbed an orange. Like there was a little lady on the opposite side sold pretzels. And while everybody was getting hamburgers and pizza, I went to the lady, grabbed the pretzel and an orange juice and sat down. And like, it was like a wallflower, you know? So it wasn't like I was like a theater kid that was like, look at me,
confidence.
Well, yeah. And I wasn't theatrical. I never did a play. So I remember telling my parents, because I saw Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, and I was like, those guys look like they're having fun. You know, I want to do that. Because when you're 12, you're like, you don't know what. You're right. Just like, oh, I could do that. That looks like fun. So I told my parents, I was like, yeah, I want to be an actor. And they laughed because they're like this shy kid. And, you know, also they're from Italy and I'm first generation American. So like we knew nobody in the business. Like movies were foreign to us. Like my dad, I think he took me to one movie my whole life. Like the first movie he took me to was, it was funny. It was Indiana Jones came out. I think I was like 10. And he was like, oh, don't check out this movie, Indiana Jones. And I didn't know what it was because it said Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. But it sounded like Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was
right. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Right.
And I thought it was like a movie about the Bible. About, you know, because it was like the Ark of the Covenant. And I was right. Like, I don't want to see this religious movie. So I cried and was like, I want to see Annie. So my dad took me to see Annie and he fell asleep. And I watched Little Orphan Annie. And that was like the first movie I ever watched. It was like, I was 10. Because I didn't go to the movies, you know?
Yeah.
So telling them I wanted to be an actor was like, tell them I wanted to go to Mars. It was just like not a thing that was possible. So they laughed and I didn't want to be laughed at. So next time they said, what do you want to be? I said, a lawyer. And they were like, ooh, a lawyer in the family. My son's going to be a lawyer, you know? So then I kind of convinced myself that's what I would be, you know? And I went to all through high school and didn't do a play in high school ever. And then I went to college and I went to 1 year at St. John's University and I studied pre-law, you know? And then I took an acting 101 class and I really liked it. I was like, wow, because I was so shy, it was freeing for me. Cause when I was playing other characters, like people don't see me, they see these other people. I could do anything as a character. Yeah. Right?
It's always that acting 101.
Yeah. Acting 101. And so then I met this guy and he was like a manager. And I was trying to get into like modeling a little bit and I was doing like little things here and there. It wasn't like, you know, just to pick up money on the side. And then he said, if you want to be an actor, you should really study it. And so he helped me transfer into NYU to study theater there. And so I told my parents, hey, I'm going to transfer to NYU. And I actually auditioned and I got into the theater program there. And they said, well, why are you studying acting? I don't understand. And this school's like twice as much as your other school. Like,
yeah.
I said, well, it has a, you know, as a lawyer, you have to stand up in front of people. I'm really shy. And acting is required to be a lawyer.
You're lying to them.
Yeah, I totally lied.
Totally playing them. I see what you're doing.
So I said, you know, you have to stand up in front of people and it's like doing a play. You have to take acting class. It'll help me be a better lawyer. And they didn't know. So the good thing about my parents was, There's parents that like, if their kid like shits in a box, they're like, look what my kid made, you know? And then there's the other parents that are just like, on the other side, like my parents, like my mom never came to a baseball game. You know, my dad took me to like one movie my whole life. Like they just did their thing and I did my thing. And in some ways, like it was good because they kind of stayed out of like, I actually had a conversation with my mom the other day. I said, because I had a motorcycle at 19. I was like, did you guys like me? Like, I would never let my son get a motorcycle at 19. She was like, oh, no, that's what you wanted to do. I thought you were crazy, but I was like, you know, that's what it was like. They let me be me, which was really kind of wonderful.
But they loved you and they gave you all that stuff.
And they loved me and it wasn't
See, that's why it worked. They gave you the love and everything.
It wasn't like they were ignoring and abandoning me.
They just weren't on top of you.
They just weren't. weren't on top of me. They weren't helicopter parents. So like when I said I was going into NYU, they were just like, okay, you know, I got a baseball game this weekend. Okay. You know, like, I'm coming home tonight. I'm going out. Okay. You come, don't come home late. Okay. You know, like they didn't.
Jeez, I wish that was my parents.
They didn't really helicopter parent me.
Get your ass home or I'll beat the shit out of you.
So they were loose in that sense, but in the sense of like, hey, I really think you could make it as an actor. They weren't that either.
Right.
You know? But they never said, you can't make it as an actor. They just were like, he's going to NYU. He's taking acting class. I don't know. You know, they just kind of stayed out of it. So I went to NYU and I studied acting. And then I ended up getting an episode, like a guest starring episode of something. And I was like, hey, I'm going to be on this guest. And I had like the lead episode.
Right. Right.
Lead, what are they called? Lead, guest lead, you know? The lead.
Is that what they call them? Yeah, guest lead? Leads?
Guest lead? I don't know.
I don't know.
Lead actor in the guest lead.
Was it
on
a soap opera?
It was a, I can't or, say the show, but it was or, a, it was a show that dealt with law, and it also dealt with other stuff like order.
Oh,
like there was stuff order. Like that. There was order.
And there was also like criminal
and
law.
Criminal stuff and judge
okay.
stuff.
Gotcha.
You know, and stuff like
I
that.
Gotcha.
And so, so I did a show. That was my first thing.
Due to the sex strike, Peter Facinelli can't say the word. Beep, beep.
Yeah, so it dealt with like judges and laws. So I ended up being the lead, I guess, leader on that show. And I said, hey, I'm going to be on this series. And so my parents watched it and they thought I was going to be like, the guy just kind of like, oh, that's my hand. Did you see it? You know, or the guy just walked through the door
they
in the
were
back.
Blown away.
No, they weren't. They were surprised, but I never got
what?
Oh my God, that was amazing. I can't believe you did that either.
Oh.
I think they were just a little
shell-shocked.
They're
just like, great, you got paid. Yeah, that's great.
They were just like, oh, that's cool. And they really didn't think anything of it. I mean, honestly, for the first 20 years of my career, my dad would be like, listen, if you ever need it, your room, well, we still have a room for you. Like, so I never I think you finally made it. You know, I feel like they're proud of me.
But after you did a movie with a bunch of vampires.
Nah, I think that they
come
still,
on.
No, because here's the thing. They don't understand the world of it. So when I go home, you know, my mom's more interested in like, why aren't you eating? You know what I mean? Eat your pasta. Like you're getting too skinny. Eat this. Or like, so it's like the blessing of my parents are they would love me no matter what I did. You know what I mean? The fact that they only care.
Don't make me cry now.
They only care if I'm happy. That like my mom says, like if something's really successful, she says, are you happy? Then I'm happy too. She doesn't care if it's successful. As long as I'm happy, they're happy, which is really wonderful.
Do they ask you that? Do they ask
you
that?
Yeah, they ask you.
Are you happy?
Yeah,
are you good?
Yeah, like I'll be like, hey, I got this movie. Good. Are you happy? Yeah. Like, good. Yeah, but they're not.
They're not enamored.
They're not blown away.
They're not like, it's just like they want you to be happy. And if that makes you happy, that makes them happy.
I think the biggest compliment I got was actually recently because my parents went to see On Fire in the movie theater.
Right.
You know, which is nice. We had a great run. We had like 500 theaters for a small movie is a wonderful, you know, run. And so my dad and mom went to see it in the middle of the day. And then my dad called me after. I said, what'd you think? He goes, oh, it was great. You're better than Richard Gere. I was like, okay. Because he doesn't know anybody, my dad. So like, he'll always throw out references like, John Wayne, that's an actor. I'm like, I can't work. Like, I can never impress them because I'm like, I can't work with John Wayne. He's dead, you know? So I remember calling my dad once. And I said, hey, I'm working with Danny DeVito. And he goes, oh, was that the guy in My Cousin Vinny? And I was like, no, that's Joe Pesci.
And then
I was like, I called my parents. I said, I'm working with Drew Barrymore. And they go, oh, is he nice?
great grandfather Barrymore.
I don't know. So they just don't know anybody so they're not impressed.
Well, the same thing happened to me. I was at the Elizabeth Glazer AIDS Foundation event 1 year and I took my grandparents with me. And I see George Lucas. And he looks at me and goes, and I'm like, come here. He points at me.
Wow.
And I go, guys, George Lucas is asking me to come over and talk to him. My grandfather goes, who's that? Let's go talk to the guy from Cheers. Ted Danson's right over there. I'm like, it's fucking George Lucas. They didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And he invited me to the ranch and all that stuff.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
You know, they, But you know what's great is, and I'll sort of elaborate on what you said. My grandparents, I have letters from my grandfather that would say, Mikey, we just want to say how proud we are of you. Mm. And even if you didn't do any of this, you're a good man. You're a good boy.
That's
we
the love you. About.
And like that meant more to me than anybody ever saying you were great in the film or you were great in this. Or just hearing my grandparents just say they love me.
I think it's a different, I don't know where your grandparents are from, but it's a different generation. And like, they're proud of me when they hear, like, I remember that my parent, I took my parents to I was doing that series that I did for like 7 years. And the showrunners said to them, your son's a really hard worker. And that stuck with my dad. Like,
see?
He's like, you know, when they said you were a hard worker, that made me really proud. Like the show could come and do well and like tons of people.
Matter.
And
it could be, you work hard.
It's like the fact that somebody said I was a hard worker, that it made him proud of me.
You know, I think my father, for a long time until I finally just stood up to him one day, but he would say, I think he felt like acting in this industry was a breeze and just, it was cupcakes and people give you whatever you want. You don't do anything and you don't work hard and you don't, and all he did was work hard. So I think he just didn't.
Where did you guys grow up?
I was born in New York, but I grew up in Indiana, Indiana.
But was your dad like a blue collar?
Oh, like just worked his ass off. Yeah. And I think he just didn't respect me and didn't anything. And then one day I was like, you have no idea anything about anything I fucking do. You don't know how hard I work. You don't know how hard it is. You know how much rejection we face. You don't know anything. You assume it's just, and I just stood up to him. You know, I just said that. It was just, it wasn't easy, but it was like, it was just, you're right. It's that old school mentality. Like, he wants to know that you work hard for a living. Yeah. You don't just.
Well, you memorize those monologues. And the pressure you're under and the stuff we talked about earlier.
Yeah, like, that's man.
And 12-hour day, you know.
How about just love your fucking kids? How about just unconditionally, I don't care, Ryan, what you do, Peter, whatever you do.
Well,
as long as you're happy,
honestly,
like you said.
My mom's always been like that. Like, is whatever if I worked at the drive-thru at McDonald's, my mom would treat me exactly the same. And sometimes I wanted the mom that's like, my son shit in this box, look what he made. You know what I mean?
Seriously.
But I know I'm not going to get that. So it's, but I think that a lot of part of my career was always like, I'm going to get them to be like, look, you know, look what he made. And then I never really got that. So
I let that go.
I let it go too.
I let it go.
Because it became like, you know what? They don't care, but not because they don't care. It's because they care more about me being happy.
Yeah.
Not about success. Success for them is, are you happy? Because, and it's true, like a lot of, and I'm like that with my kids now. Like, I don't care what they do as long as they're happy. That's kind of like my philosophy with them, you know?
That's a beautiful thing. It's like, you know, you're a product of your environment, your own environment. And it's like, if you had a good upbringing and your parents loved you, that's easier to translate, right? It's hard to go against the grain. It's shockingly tougher, I think, to have bad parents and then be a good parent. It's probably easier to have good parents, and also you're a good parent.
Yeah.
So you have to either break the cycle or it helps you.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. It's amazing how I see some of my friends grow up and the support that they had and the love that they had. And even if they had no money and they weren't well educated, the love that was there was just, it resonated with me.
Yeah.
As a little boy looking at other families going, you know what? She really loves my friend. She really loves her son. I remember that. And I remember when she tears up when he was going away for college. And I remember like certain things that I was like, oh, I didn't necessarily get that, but I could see it, and that's important.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So anyway, sometimes it comes back to me. Sometimes I talk about me and
it's great when you have that, you could see that in other people. And even in this conversation, when you're like, I could see the love of my parents through how Peter's parents, you know, treat them too. Cause it's like, it's a different love. It's not the, I'm going to show up at every baseball game. It's like, hey, did you enjoy yourself today? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a good love too.
Yeah. No, I think it's important. I think it's just important to just be like, I love you. Whatever you do, I'm going to love you.
Mm.
don't always try to get my approval. Just do things because you love them. Do things because they give you purpose. Do things because, you know, they make you happy or whatever it is. You have a passion for it. Mm. It's like, you know, but I think why I don't have kids. You're like, why don't you have kids? I'm like, well, I'm 51. You're like, so what? I'm 49. I got another kid on the way.
Yeah. Pacino and De Niro.
You have a 1 year old.
But Pacino and De Niro just had kids.
But come on. I think there's something wrong with that. Well, I mean, you may not, but I'm
How
old is he, Pacino?
I don't know. 76.
But 80, think about it. When the kid's 10, he doesn't have a dad. Mm.
Well,
20.
I mean, you can enjoy him for as long as you enjoy him, I guess. Like, whatever makes people happy.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But I do think, you could be an older dad. I was on both ends of the spectrum where I was the youngest dad. I mean, I had kids at 21. Jeez. Was my first kid. I was literally the youngest dad in the kindergarten class, you know.
So you have a 27-year-old?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good Lord Almighty.
And then I have, now I have a 1-year-old, so it's kind of, I'm starting over, but it's, and so now I'm on the older end of that spectrum, you know. And most of the dads are in their 30s and 40s. And I'm like, all right. But I do feel like in a lot of ways, kids keep you young because you have to have the energy for them. But their smile lights up a room, and then all of a sudden it's like, doesn't matter how your day was. You know, I go over to him, he does a smile, he does some goofy, you know.
You're right, it does.
But when you find somebody that you want to have kids with, and I wouldn't put an age limit on it, honestly. You know what I mean? If you're in a place where you're with somebody that you love and you want to have a kid, don't be like, I'm too old. I don't think that's.
I would do it if I could be a stay at home dad and the my wife works. Mm. Well, if you could do another movie that you've done, a sequel or a show. To go back, and you know how people are always revisiting these things. Yeah. You can't say the name, but you could kind of, you know, we could figure it out. But would there be a movie that you would be like, I'd revisit that. They've got a cool idea with it. Like, would you revisit the one about the, Edie Falco?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I think all of the roles I've done, if they were ever like, would you want to revisit? There's not one role I've done where I'm like, I never want to play that again. You know what I mean?
Not one.
I've always had this litmus test, and it served me well. When I take on a role, I always think to myself, am I going to be excited on my ride to work? And that's the litmus test I have for saying yes.
I say the same, element of fun.
Yeah, because if I have the passion on the way to work and I'm excited on the way to work, I know I'm going to put everything I have into it. And then I can't control if the movie does well, the TV show does well. But when I look back and someone's like, what was your favorite thing you've ever done? I can honestly say all of them, because I've had the same level of passion on the ride to work for each and every one of them. So if someone's like, hey, would you want to revisit that role? Yeah, because I had fun doing it. You know what I mean? Even if it was like, I've done one that's for 7 years. It's like, I honestly had fun going to work every day.
Even the vampire movie?
Yeah.
You would do it in a heartbeat?
In a heartbeat. I mean, I'm probably too old to play now because vampires don't age, but...
You can age if you want to, can't you?
Nah, vampires
can't you
don't
if you
age.
Don't drink enough blood and you get older and then you drink blood?
No, I think...
They could change the shit around.
I think they could...
I think you look good.
Oh, thank you, man.
It's all in the eyes.
Yeah.
Hey, this is called Shit Talking with Peter Facinelli. This is these are my patrons. This is just rapid fire. And you can answer them. Patreon.com/inside of you. I couldn't do this show without you. Thanks for supporting the podcast. Leanne, how has being a father made you a better person?
It gives me a lot more patience. Cause now when I look at people, oftentimes when I'm like, you know, somebody cuts you off or somebody, you know, rubs you the wrong way, I think of them and think they were a child once too. And you know what I mean? So I have more compassion for people because I could see their inner child, because my kids have good days. Like my 1-year-old, he has great days. He has bad days, you know? And so having the patience for him, I try to bring that into having the patience with a more adult.
So if someone cuts you off, you don't get pissed off?
I don't. I mean, to a fault.
Wow.
Because here's the thing, and it's a wonderful thing.
But you're part Italian. What the fuck are you doing?
No, because... when you don't react to them, then it's almost comical because they're like,
they get madder.
They get more, and they're waving their hands around. Sometimes I'll wave and smile, like, you know what I mean? And I don't mean to piss them off more.
Sorry about that, man.
But it's like, you know, if you don't get sucked into somebody else's energy, there's a great quote. If I try to give you a gift and you don't take it, who does it belong to? It falls back on me, right? So if someone's trying to throw their energy of negativity onto you and you don't take it,
it just goes back to
them. It just falls back on them.
Words of wisdom. Professionally. Little Lisa, what has been your biggest challenge this year and what has been your biggest accomplishment this year?
The biggest accomplishment was, you know, working really hard on Fire to like get it to a place where it got into 500 theaters and
that's
like
crazy.
You know,
dedicated to all the survivors and firefighters and
to make
rebuilders.
To help shape that movie into something that people are enjoying and then being able to, you know, promote it with SAG's not only approval but them cheering us on because we signed the interim agreement. I was able to work with the producers to have them agree to pretty much everything we're asking the studios for. So, you know, SAG is actually using us as an example. Hey, if these smaller producers can sign this agreement, then the bigger studios should too. So, like, it feels good to be part of. Part of me is like, this movie I did was the first movie in theaters under the SAG interim agreement, and that to me is like a wonderful feeling because I'm helping to like my union. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To help them in their battle. And I talk to them all the time, like, what else can I do? Because I really do believe in what we're fighting for. But the struggle in that sense this year has been, you know, because of the strike, it's been tough because I love being creative and there's less creativity to be had or to work with or to, you know, jobs to do. Like, so then I end up getting... it almost feels like COVID again, where I'm at home going, what can I do to like get my creative juices flowing? And that's a challenge to like, you know, when you're on set, it's easier when somebody's like, this is where you have to be. This is what we're doing. This is your lunch. And this is the end of the day. And these are the lines that you have to learn. And there's structure in that. And I find it harder when I don't have that structure to structure it for myself. You know what I mean? And so a day could go by and it's just like, I didn't do anything today. I was like stuck. I got sucked into like my Instagram stories and like, you know, and there's just other things I want to be doing. And then you kind of procrastinate. And like, so the challenge has been trying to work that structure in for myself.
Yeah. I like it. Bob K, Elvis or the Beatles?
Wow, I gotta say Elvis because I have an Elvis pinball machine at home and he's the king, but I do like Bob and the Beatles too.
You like Bob who asked the question?
No, but I thought you meant Bob Dylan.
Oh no, Bob asked Elvis and the Beatles. He's like, oh, I like Bob too.
I thought you meant Bob.
Like, oh, Nixon will like that you like Bob.
I do like Bob too.
I do like Bob, I spit.
I thought you said Bob or Elvis or the Beatles, as in Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan, the Beatles. But Elvis would have to be my...
I'd say the Elvis for sure. Lee and Kristen say, if you could forget a book or a movie and be able to experience it for the first time again, what would you choose? Book or a movie?
A book or a movie? That's a tough...
I would say, would I get the same feeling as when I first saw it? Because like if I saw The Shining for the first time now and felt the same scare that I did back then, I'd say The Shining or... Star Wars
or
Empire Strikes Back.
I mean, the cool thing about Star Wars is now when you get the new Star Wars, you get to have that feeling of like, oh, it feels like the first time watching. And then, you know, because there's new stories to be told. But I would go with Star Wars, the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jam and Jenny, what's your favorite way to relax or unwind after a stressful day? smoke some of the reefer, do you?
I mean, I don't know. This is terrible, but let me think. To unwind, sex. My mind went to like sex.
If that's what it is, why not? If you have sex, it relaxes you.
Sex
puts me to sleep.
Does it? It's relaxing.
I mean, not during.
Yeah,
but like,
but that's relaxing. No,
absolutely. There's nothing more relaxing than having what rhymes with forgasm. But yeah. Then you just immediately, for guys at least, it's like,
yeah.
It just shuts you down.
Well, if you're having a stressful day too, like takes you out of the stressful day because you're in the moment of doing something that is feeling good and also
connection
and you know, and a sharing of love, and then at the end it's very relaxing. I mean, is that terrible to say?
In fact, I may not even have that for the patrons. I may do that for a question so more people can hear it. Why not? We would need to relax. I like to have sex. Why is that weird?
Yeah.
How weird. Dana asks, what's the weirdest gift you've gotten from a fan?
Oh, what's the weirdest gift? I don't know if it was a gift, but I had a fan once say, will you sign my knickers? And I didn't know what knickers were. So I was like, yeah, sure. And then she was like, gave me some underwear.
My knickers.
And I was like, oh, I can't sign that. That's just too weird.
That's too weird. I had someone ask if I'd sign their breast.
Mm.
And I did. No, I didn't. It was a side breast, so I think I did that. Look, you've done so much. We didn't even crack the surface on so many things, but you guys have known all the things he's done. You could look him up. He's got this movie On Fire, which I sat down and watched, really enjoyed. It's an important movie. It's intense. It's emotional. It's also got some comedy to it. Mm. I think there's some funny little nuances in there that really made me laugh out loud. Lance especially.
Yeah, Lance.
It was really cool. The characters were well developed. It's On Fire, November 14th. Video on demand or digital release. This has been an honor, man.
Thanks, man.
Did you have fun?
I had a really good time. What's the weird thing is you and I have been around for a long time and we've never really crossed
paths. I know.
I don't think
and I always liked you. I always liked you.
Yeah, me too. I don't think we've ever been like at an event at the same.
No.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Nope. I thought to myself, like, I've never met Peter.
Yeah.
But I always loved your work.
Yeah,
I swear.
I know of you and I know who you are and I know your work and I've felt the same respect and same like, oh, that's a cool guy. And I know we have friends that are, I think, know each other too.
I'm sure of
it. So it was a pleasure.
That list. Do you know? No, I'm kidding.
Such a pleasure to actually sit down and chat with you. Really enjoyed
you
it.
You too, man. Thanks for being here. Thanks for taking the time. Good luck on the movie, On Fire.
Thank you.
Solid guy. Again, you know, when you watch someone act throughout the years and you're like, oh, he's got this persona. I wonder how he is. Is he serious? Is he? And he just came across so humble and sweet. And it was really nice to see. Just a good dude. It's nice when the business doesn't get you. You can't let the business get you.
Oh, that old business.
That old entertainment industry business. It can get you.
Oh, yeah.
But I appreciate you for being on the podcast and good luck with the movie. I know it's going to do well. It's really good. And, thank you, Peter. So you guys could also, write a review if you want. You could watch on YouTube or anywhere else. Well, you could just watch on YouTube, but, I guess what we should do right now is the, top tier patrons.
We should.
I think we should. Thank you guys so much for listening. It means the world to me. Again, patreon.com/inside of you can get your name shouted out. Top tiers and other tiers get certain things like boxes from me and little notes from me and occasional Zooms. And just there's all sorts of stuff. I even think that the top tiers might be two tiers from top tier, but they get, you know, we get a bonus episode with me and Ryan. They get like, what else do they get? They get shit talking questions. Mm-hmm. Shit talking is now, I think, a patron exclusive. So those are questions just from patrons. So patreon.com/insidey. Let's read out the top tier patrons. Ryan, you have them in front of you?
I do.
All right. Nancy D, Leah and Kristen, Little Lisa, Yukiko.
Julie, Brian H, Nico P, Robert B, Jason W, Sophie M, Raj C, Joshua D, Jennifer N.
Wow, that was fast.
I was feeling it. Coffee kicked in.
Stacy L, Jamal F, Janelle B. I just saw you, Janelle. Just saw a lot of you. So wonderful to see you. Mike E, Eldon Supremo, 99 more, Santiago M, Chad W, Leanne P, Maddie S, Belinda N, Dave Hall. Look, it's Dave Hall. I love Dave Hall. He's my favorite. Dave, I miss you, Dave Hall.
Sheila G, Brad D, Ray H, Tabitha T, Tom N, Talia M, Betsy D, Rhiannon C, Corey K, Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Jeremy C, Brandy D, Joey M.
And you saved Eugene and Lee. I just saw you guys at the con too. What a treat. And I got to see the little one. He's so cute. And he was good. He wasn't crying, guys. Oh. Eugene and Leah are such good parents. Corey, Angela F, Mel S, Christine S, Eric H, Shane R, Andrew M, Amanda R, Kevin E, Stephanie K, Jor L,
Jammin J, Leanne J, Luna R, Mike F, Stone H, Kayla, parenthetical, Stay Wild, Moonchild.
Yes.
And parentheses. Brian L, Kendall L, Kara. Oh, is it Kara or Kara?
Kara.
Kara. Kerosene.
I think it's Kerosene.
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 Kerosene. Jessica B, Kyle F, and Marisol P.
Marisol. You weren't at the last few cons, Marisol. What the hell, Marisol? Kaylee J, hi. Brian A, Ashley F, Marion Louise L, Romeo B, Frank B, Jen T, Nikki L, April R, Randy S, JDW, Oral P, Ginger Insomniac, Rachel D, Lorelai L, hi, Lorelai. Hi, Melissa H, Nick W, Stephanie and Evan, Charlene A, and Don G. I couldn't do this podcast without you. You know that. Thank you from the bottom of my friggin' heart. And for my Michael Rosenbaum here in the Hollywood Hills of California.
I'm Ryan Tez. I'm also here.
You're here.
Hey.
Little wave to the camera. Guys, thank you. Be good to yourself. I'll see you later.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.